We're going to do five foundations of effective teams today. A couple opening thoughts. This material comes from a book by Patrick Lencioni. Has anyone read the book? Five Dysfunctions of a Team? He wrote it in 2002. It's still on the New York Times bestseller list. Yeah. And it's written, I recommend the book for you, especially if you're involved in leading teams. It's written, all of his books are what he calls fables. So it's a fictional account. It's a story of a company on the west coast of the U.S. that has problems, and they hire a new executive to try to get things straight. And you see the outworking of these principles in a ongoing fictional account. So it's a fun read, and it's a good way to learn the principles. Now, when he wrote the book in 2002, he got so many requests for his organization to come and do their consulting that they couldn't meet all the demands. So they created another book, and it's called A Handbook for the Five Dysfunctions. And what they did is they put all of the training material that they use when they go and do a consulting with an organization in a handbook so that you could do it yourself, because they couldn't meet the demands of all the people that wanted their services. So I purchased that book a number of years ago and put together a modified version. I can't call it dysfunctions because it's too negative, so I changed it around to five foundations of an effective team, looking at it from a positive approach. And just a few opening remarks before we look at the material. First of all, we've covered a lot of these concepts through the course of the year in different settings, but this is an opportunity to take all the material and put it in one cohesive model. So we will recap probably a lot of information and material. Come on in, ladies. There's a special dispensation of grace today, so just get your name tag and grab your seat. It's almost the end of the year, and y'all have been so good, so. So we'll be recapping a lot of the important concepts that we've looked at in isolated context, but now here's an opportunity to bring it all together and to see how the concepts interconnect and produce a model that you can use to evaluate the teams that you work with. And also, the thing that I hope will happen the most is that we can create a discussion here today around best practices. Because all of us in the various teams that we lead have incorporated these principles, oftentimes intuitively, not even conscious what we were doing. And I think as we discuss and ask ourselves questions and then share with the group, we'll all be able to benefit from the collective wisdom. So that's kind of the goal. Most of what we'll do today will be interactive and discussing with one another. Now, before we actually look at the notes, a definition for a team, I wish I would have put this in your notes, but I neglected to do that, but something you'll probably want to write down. When we talk about a team, what is a team? Lencioni gives a succinct definition. He says a team is a relatively small group of people. A relatively small group of people. And Lencioni recommends the number between 3 and 12. I think that's a good number. I think if you have less than 3, it's hard to really have the dynamics of a team when there's just two of you, because usually it's a boss and a subordinate. So you probably need 3 to really have a team. But when you get over 12, then you just have a collection of teams together. There's no hard and fast rule here, but when you start getting over 12, you probably ought to have 2 different teams, and they're probably not actual teams, because as the definition continues, a team is a relatively small group of people with common goals, and the responsibility for achieving them. So, for example, this isn't a team here today. This is a collection of people who lead teams, but it's not a team. So a lot of the exercises that Lencioni has created, we can't really do here because you're not with your team. You're with other people who have, in a very large, broad definition, we're all part of the larger Metro Manila team. But in actual reality, a team is a group that has a very specific task, very clearly defined responsibility and job, and then they're accountable to accomplishing it. And then Lencioni goes on to add that a productive team, which is what we're trying to accomplish, is one that achieves their common goals effectively and consistently. Productive team is one that achieves their common goals effectively and consistently. Any thoughts, comments so far, questions that make sense? Pam, is that real clear? All right, so we'll look at the five foundations, and I drew poorly. It looked a lot better when I was closer to it, but the farther I got away from it. Is it? No, see this one. That's bothering me right there. I'm really tempted, but I'm going to resist. Trying to overcome my OCD. Although if I look at it too long, let's just go ahead and change it. It's so easy. What do you think? Right here?
Yeah.
Is that better? Let me get back and look. It's really bad. When I come to your house, I'll fix the pictures on your wall. I can't stand when they're crooked. Okay, that's better. Yeah, so it's built on a triangle, so there's five topics or five principles, but they have decreasing order of importance. That's why the pyramid is a good model, because the base is the most important. And although all of them important, as you progress through the pyramid, they become less important, or it's more important to have the foundations right. So the first one is trust, the first foundation of a productive team. And in Lencioni's book, I copied his triangle today, it's the absence of trust. So that's the first dysfunction. Come on in, Christ. So there's a, I know there's good, that was a good way to start though. I like how you started. No, there's a dispensation of grace today, so. Absence of trust. So the dysfunction of a team is when trust is not prevalent. And he defines it this way: members of productive teams trust one another on a fundamental emotional level and are comfortable being vulnerable about their weaknesses and mistakes. They get to a point where they can be completely open to one another without filters. Now, one of the applications that Lencioni's group does when they come to an organization on the trust is they use the Myers-Briggs assessment tool, but they'll have a group exercise where everybody goes around the room and they talk about their results in Myers-Briggs, and everybody gets to interact with one another around their test results. Well, we do a similar thing with StrengthFinder, which is a great team building exercise. I hope you've done that with your team corporately, and it's probably good to do it on some kind of reoccurring basis, because when you begin to understand why the team members act the way they do, it builds a higher level of trust, that they're not doing those things just to irritate you, that's just the way that they're wired. So they trust one another on a fundamental emotional level. There's actually an emotional trust when they think about that person, and are comfortable being vulnerable about their weaknesses and mistakes. which the Strength Finder gives you an opportunity to sort of do that in a healthy framework, because there's the weakness, there's the dark side of strength that you can laugh about, and it helps you be vulnerable and just open up your heart. And I found that Filipinos, when it gets a little too intense, they have to make jokes. I finally did the Inside Out transformation with the senior pastors yesterday. It took us all day, the whole 6 hours. So it was interesting. And I just had to laugh, because within 5 or 10 minutes of introducing the whole concept of idolatry, you know, which is a pretty serious topic in the Bible, they were making jokes. I mean, there's a whole massive joke centered around Rico, mostly, and a recent purchase of his. Now, this is classic Filipino, okay? So within 5 minutes, we're making light of a pretty serious topic. But it produced that opportunity for people to be vulnerable. So I just realized it's part of being Filipino. I'm trying to learn. Now, I wonder, when I preach in our congregations and I talk about human depravity, like, nobody's smiling. I guess I need to find jokes about human depravity, you know? Somehow lighten the topic. Hi, Dexter. We have an unusual dispensation of grace today, so you're not the only one. Yes. Yes, you do. More than most. Which is why we love you so much. Number one, trust is the most important element in the development and maintenance of a productive team. We've talked about this quite a lot, and specifically when we did our session on strength-based leadership, I guess a couple of weeks ago. But this is the foundation stone. So when there's an absence of trust, it leads to a fear of conflict. People don't want to have healthy debate. And when there's not healthy debate, conflict, it leads to a lack of commitment. Nobody really commits from the heart to the projects, because they didn't really have a chance to speak their mind and to give their contribution. And because of that, it leads to an avoidance of accountability. Nobody wants to be held accountable for the project that they didn't really commit to from the heart, because they didn't have a real opportunity to share how they really felt about it, because there's just an absence of trust on the team. And as a result, the final pinnacle, there is an inattention to results. The team goals just don't get accomplished. But it all goes back to this foundation stone of trust. And when there's cracks in that foundation, it affects everything else about the organization. So it is at the bottom for a very important reason. Trust, number two, begins with the leader and then spreads to every area of the organization. And it's very tempting, because everybody in this room, not only do you lead people, but that you're led by others. And so it's very tempting and it's natural to take this material and look up. But it's healthiest in our situation is, let's see what this means for you, all right? So instead of thinking, yeah, if those people up there, or others, you know, whoever, whatever the chain is, if they did such and such, let's not even go there. Let's ask the question, is it I, Lord? Let's just draw a little circle around ourself and ask ourselves the question, are we producing trust in the people that have to look to us for direction? Because leaders, first of all, have to be trustworthy. Then followers trust. You should never demand or even expect that your team trust you. You should earn their trust. So when a leader puts the pressure on the followers or the team members to trust, he or she is started in the completely wrong direction. You never demand trust. I made that mistake for a long time in marriage, right? Because in marriage, I was taught from the Bible about the headship. I had the leadership role. And so because I was deeply insecure, I wanted to make sure very early on my wife understood I am the head of the house. Well, when you demand trust, you have circumvented the whole process of creating trust. And I discovered painfully over many years that my responsibility was to build trust, to earn trust, and not to demand it. So you increase the trust level in your organization through vulnerability. Come on down. We have a dispensation of grace today, so there's no paper. Although the later this goes, the dispensation may run out. Although maybe we're at the end of our dilatory classmates. You increase the trust level in your organization through vulnerability. This is an important lesson I learned in parenting. We somehow, by God's grace, accomplished the task of raising four children. We're not officially done yet. May 19th will be the culmination point when I get the last one married and completely out. Then I could say, all right, we did the job. Somehow, by God's grace, all four of them walked with God all their life, and there are no periods of backsliding. Not that they always were exemplary Christians, but we did it. Hallelujah. Although, when I look back, I think we certainly did a lot more things wrong than we did right, which is hopefully should be encouraging for all of you who are still in the process. In spite of. But some of the things that we did get right by God's grace is that we, in leading our children, I always took the lead, or I won't say always, I tried and often did, although often failed, to be transparent with my children and acknowledge failure when I had not done my job and had failed my children and had lost my temper or whatever. And sometimes leaders are insecure about that because they think if people see weakness, then they may lose confidence. And yet the exact opposite happens, is my children trusted me more because they knew I screwed up. I mean, I wasn't fooling them. And it's my acknowledgement of that that caused them to trust me more. And in the later years, when you begin to lose the kind of control that you have when you can actually forcibly hold them down, you know, it's a little bit easier. But when they get bigger, you know, and my two boys are definitely bigger than I am, and they got that fairly early on. You lose the kind of physical control. You need the heartfelt trust when pressures are pulling them in a lot of different directions, and they don't have to, but they come to you, Dad, what should I do in this situation? And you've earned that kind of trust. So vulnerability produces the kind of trust in your organization so that people genuinely trust you from the heart, not just because you have the title of team leader. Now, number three, and we examined this when we looked at strength-based leadership, but we'll go over it again just briefly, because you can't talk about trust too much, I don't think. Trust is necessary at three different levels. I think I just gave you two maybe when we talked, but anyway, there are three. Competence is number one. Competence. So can your team trust you to get the job done? Are you qualified for the task that you have? Do you have the competence? Character. Character. I think I've referred to a couple times the book by Marshall Goldsmith, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. Do you remember me referring to that? He wrote a book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. Huh? I didn't? Oh, okay. Well, Marshall Goldsmith wrote a book called What Got You Here Won't Get You There, which is a brilliant title, and actually the best part of the book is the title. Okay? So don't buy the book. I'll give you the best part right here. But Goldsmith has an interesting role. He is hired by corporations to help them with top achievers who, because of talent, progressed through the organization very rapidly and then got to a level where they couldn't grow anymore. They stagnated. And so Goldsmith is hired by an organization, and he'll come in and work with their top producers. And his arrangements, his financial arrangements, is he works with this individual for a year, and if he doesn't get results, he doesn't get paid. And he always gets paid. Yeah. So he's discovered over the years that the main issues that stop talented people or cause them to stagnate in a certain place in their growth development is little areas of character. They're not major issues. They're the Song of Solomon refers to them as the little foxes that spoil the vineyard. They're not major, glaring, obvious character issues. They're small things that cause the people around these top performers to cease to take them seriously. They don't trust their character anymore. And Goldsmith actually found 20. He's delineated 20 of them. And it's probably worth the price of the book, at least one person buy the book and then share it around, just to have that list of 20. It's a good little indicator, and maybe for an HR perspective, I think probably when you're having problems with people, I think just about everybody's going to fit somewhere in that list as an issue. So a couple of them, just to give you the idea of the little areas of character. The number one issue that he found is what he calls winning too much. Winning too much. It's the need to win at all costs and in all situations, when it matters, when it doesn't, and when it's totally beside the point. Wow. Winning too much. And, you know, that's, man, I just identify with that so much because, I mean, it's a definite proclivity that I have. When I get convinced about something, I really believe that the entire world needs to think that way. And it's my personal job and mission to convince everyone that they are wrong and that I am right. In situations that matter, situations that don't, and when it just doesn't make any difference whatsoever. Can anybody else, and you don't have to show your hands, but just in your heart, nod in agreement with me, can identify with that? I think it's common for people who are high achievers, who just have a natural ambition, want to get somewhere in life, which probably refers to most of the people in this room. There's a tendency just to just want to win every situation. And I don't know how many people I offended with that issue. And I pastored for a long time in the beginning of our ministry, but fortunately, I no longer do that. Fortunately for God's people. And fortunately for me. My wife spent most of the first 10 years of our marriage explaining me. To confused and offended church members. That's her main role. But it stifled, stopped me from progressing. And these are little character issues. Now that's not a major issue, right? We don't deal with that in Victory Weekend, right? I mean, these aren't things that stop you from being in the ministry. They're smaller issues, but they will stop people from trusting you. And people won't take you seriously over a period of time. You want a few more?
Yes.
Gosh, all these. I guess I probably wrote the ones that I felt the most convicted about. So the ones that seemed the most pertinent. Probably, I'm realizing now, because they reflect my sins. The other one is adding too much value. Adding too much value. The overwhelming desire to add our own two cents to every discussion. Now see, I have input theme, and I've been collecting data all my life, and had a pretty good memory. Now, age has taken its toll, but early on in my Christian life, I had memorized about 3/4 of the New Testament, not including the Gospels, the epistles. I had it memorized. And I just had to read a verse one time, and I had it memorized. Now, that gift is long gone. I can't remember where I put my socks. Although I can remember my phone number when I was 5. And my first license plate number, the first car that I owned. And crazy kinds of things like that. So I have collected all sorts of seemingly random data that I just feel compelled at situations to show you, impress you of how smart I am. Adding too much value. I just think people are going to be so blessed by my little tidbits. But it just deteriorates people's trust. Adding too much value. Whew, this is more painful than I thought it was going to be. Let's keep going, because I do have 3 more. Making destructive comments. Destructive comments. The needless sarcasms and cutting remarks that we think make us sound sharp and witty. Is this a Filipino thing?
Yes.
Okay. Because most, but I guess you probably do it with a smile though, right? No?
To diminish the pain.
What's it? To diminish the pain, yeah. Well, my family's English, so the English are well known for sarcasm. We really can't, if you get around our family, when all our kids are together, we can't communicate well without sarcasm. And then my mother, she was raised in Brooklyn. And if you know anything about Brooklyn, it's pretty well known for people tell you exactly what they think about you, regardless of how diplomatic or politic it might be. It caused me a problem because the first years of our ministry we pastored in the southern states. And in the south, in America, is everything's fine. So when you ask a person, how are you doing? Oh, I'm fine. The wife's fine. Kid's fine. Dog's fine. Cat's fine. Everything's fine. Well, if you're from Brooklyn, you're not satisfied with that. So you just tell a person exactly how you feel at every moment of the situation, whether they want to hear it or not. And making destructive comments is just, it's easy, right? And especially to show people how sharp and witty you are. Now, these things won't cause you to lose your job necessarily, but they will deteriorate trust among teammates. Failing to give proper recognition is another one. The inability to praise or recognize achievement. And then refusing to express regret. The inability to take responsibility for our actions, admit we're wrong, and recognize how our actions affect others. There's 15 more in the book, and I don't have them listed here, but just to give you an idea, they're little issues that cause trust to break down in our team. Any thoughts? Comments? True confession time? Compassion is number 3, compassion. Remember, we talked about that a couple weeks ago in the book, First Break All the Rules. We found that the most successful managers, team leaders, care more about their employees' personal welfare than their contribution to the organization. So these things are necessary to build trust. All right, what we want to do now, to take the rest of this session, is I've got 2 simple questions, and these are the questions I'm not too creative. This question's for all the different 5 we'll look at. I want you to think, what's the single most effective thing you do that promotes trust on your team? And then, why do you think it's so effective? So think about what you do in the teams that you lead. What do you think is the single most effective thing you do that actually builds trust? And why do you think it works? And then, I want you to ask yourself the question, what's the most frequent mistake you make that tends to erode, erode trust, at least potentially, on your team? So what's the best thing that you do you think that builds trust, and why is it effective? And then what's the most frequent mistake that you make? So take a couple of minutes, think about that right there, and maybe just jot a note or two to yourself. And then with the group at your table there, if you just discuss that, talk with your individual group there, talk about it. And we'll take maybe 10 minutes on that. And then we'll just have some group discussion that we can learn from one another about things that each of us do that we can incorporate in leading our team. So is that clear? Yes? All right, go ahead and answer the question, then just begin discussing with your team members. Okay. I'd like to hear from Karen. Karen, would you grab the microphone? Tell us, what is the single most effective thing you do that promotes trust on your team?
Well, what I normally do for our team, I would communicate that they can be themselves and be accepted. So they know that they can make mistakes, they can just be themselves, they don't have to put up a front. If I ask them to do something and if they don't know how to do it, I ask it directly. Can you do that? If they say, I'll research on it. I'll demo how to do it, or I'll teach them how to do it. And it's not something of a big deal for me. It's just, okay, business as usual. If you don't know, then I'll just teach you and then go ahead and do it.
So don't sit down yet. Why do you think that's effective?
I think that's effective because they know that they are accepted, for one, and they know that they can just be themselves. They don't have to project anything that is not themselves, but yeah. They know that they should improve.
Okay, so the question you don't want to answer, what is the most frequent mistake you make that tends to erode trust?
In our team, if someone makes a mistake or something that has to be addressed, we address it right away. We don't tolerate, but there are times that someone might have a season of making frequent mistakes. So I don't know if that would erode the trust or if that would build trust. So there are times I feel that maybe this person may have had too much of a time with us, something like that, if you may say. But I think overall, I think it should be done, because at least they know if they did something right or if they did something wrong, and what you tolerate, you really cannot change.
Okay, great. Karen? Karen, who would you like to hear from? Select someone from the class.
From Sharon.
You would like to hear from Sharon? I would too. Sharon?
Yes.
What's the single most effective thing you do that produces trust on your team?
I think for me, it's being vulnerable, because people would see me as jolly and very interactive. But I'm really
jolly.
I'm very private.
Uh-huh.
So it's really an effort to make myself vulnerable to them, to let them know that I make mistakes. And
so how do you do that? Give me an example of how you make yourself vulnerable.
I think it's more on like what Mr. Alex said, that you have to maximize lunch. So that's where I talk with them.
Maximize lunch.
Lunch with them. So when we have lunch, I talk with them. Just eat together, and then spontaneous. Just this is what's happening.
It all comes down to food, doesn't it?
Yes. So that's what happens. So they see that I'm not really a superwoman, that I make mistakes. So it builds trust that they see me not just a perfect person, that they can also commit mistakes and just be normal working professional.
Yeah. So what's the most frequent mistake you make?
I think the most frequent, I think it's more, again, I'm really, really less on the compassionate side.
Okay.
So sometimes I tend to work, and then I make it, nowadays it's very deliberate on my part to notice the little things that's happening with the staff, and oh, something is wrong, maybe. So I try to look at them and then just feel I'm not really strong on the empathy also. So I try to feel if they're having a bad day or something. I learned it the hard way, so now I'm very conscious of
it. But what is it? I don't understand the mistake. What's the mistake that you make? Not
being deliberate on those areas to notice that sometimes
that they're human beings.
Yes, that I ask too much and then I realize, oops, there's something personal going on that needs to be considered. They need ministry and all those things.
Thank you, Sharon. Sharon, who would you like to hear from?
Other side, let me see. Krish.
Krish likes to talk on a microphone. Krish, what's the single most effective thing you do that promotes trust? Matter of fact, why don't you turn around and talk to... There we go.
There. The single most effective thing, I think it's... Because I love talking. It's communication. I like bouncing to everybody what needs to be done or the progress of things. So like I bounce and I listen. If I hear a comment or two that's related to what I'm asked to do, I try to respond to it right away. And I even tell people that I heard it already. I heard it. I'm doing something about it. Let's work it out together. So I'd rather over-communicate than under-communicate.
Yeah. So why do you think that's effective?
Because it keeps people on the same page. And and the momentum, instead of going down, it can go up. Because everybody knows, okay, we made a mistake here. Let's move forward. So it brings them from step one to step 10. Achievers.
Okay. So what's the most frequent mistake you make?
I appreciate the little areas of character, the winning too much. This is always my dilemma because I end up strategic activator achiever. It's like when I'm on the team, everybody slacks back. It's like everything's taken care of. And even if sometimes I tell them this is not yet done, I need help on this, everybody's like, yeah, okay, you can fix it. So I tend to, even if I expose vulnerability, sometimes I feel like I just need to stop doing or start delegating more and leave them behind so that they start moving forward.
I don't think I understand. Say it real clear for me. Most frequent mistake?
The winning too much part, because people will tend to feel like everything is covered, even if I tell them that there's something wrong. Just because I'm in the team, they tend to take everything casually, like it will still be fixed, it's okay.
Yeah.
So I tend to be like overlooked when I'm telling something that this needs to be done, I have a problem with this.
Okay.
So I need to tell them, I don't know, louder, that I need more help.
Chris, who do you want to hear from?
Jerry.
I do too. A rascal back there. How you doing, Jerry?
Yeah, I'm full. I'm good.
Jerry,
I'm
what fine. Is the single most effective thing you do?
I'm full and I'm fine. Whatever.
What did he say? What did I miss?
Okay, what is the single most effective thing you do?
I asked you first.
Can I ask you?
No, you can't.
Anyways, I wrote here, whenever there's a church project or church event, I ask their opinion about it. And that way, they will think that they matter. Their opinion matters. And after asking their opinions, I delegate the task. This thing you can do, since you suggested something, you do it.
Yeah.
Well, we call it touch move in the ministry. And on the other hand, on the contrary, the most frequent mistake is the contrary of it, is to present an activity that is already made up. Since I've been in the ministry for so long, you know that this project will move or will be a success. So we tend to present a project that's not ready for inputs.
And why does that break down trust?
So it erodes their trust. Yeah. Let's say that project failed or it's a bust, then they'll say, it's your project anyway, so that's you.
Yeah, great. Jerry, who do you want to hear from?
You? No.
Sorry, not an option.
I'll try my friend there, Dexter.
Come on, Dexter. We want to hear from you. Dexter, what's the single most effective thing you do that promotes trust on your team?
I was telling Pastor Kaloy that I'm actually very real to them and really take time off. And if I make a mistake, I tell them that I'm really sorry and I'm genuine about it. And
you're good at apologizing.
Yeah. First hand, huh? But I could be vulnerable also.
Yeah.
I could be very vulnerable, and I can just speak out my mind and tell them how I feel about it, and make sure that I always rectify it and do my best at all times. My frequent mistake, though, is I'm too friendly. I'm too nice.
Why does that erode trust?
It's because they don't value the trust already. They'll take it lightly as well. They'll say, "All right, because he's a good guy."
Just a buddy.
Yeah.
Kind of a pal.
Yeah. So sometimes, when I do get mad, and when I get mad, I can pick the guy up, give him a hard time. But I always have to remind myself that God has saved me through the blood of Jesus Christ. And so this has changed a whole lot.
That's good.
But I find it tough. And I was telling Pastor Kaloy that I have different operating styles from my team. I trust them so much that I don't do follow-up. I just want it done sometimes. And there's sometimes going to be a problem when it comes to, like, something's missing and the end product doesn't really come out the way I want it to be. And so that's it, basically.
Yeah, great. Thank you. All right.